Hello, everyone, and welcome back. It's Richard Lanna for Set for Success, where we help you create a roadmap to transform your business, career, or life. Do you remember the expression, if you build it, they will come? I was thinking about that expression the other day, but more related to agriculture. I was thinking about the expression, if you plant it, will it grow? Now, I have to admit, I'm not a big person on plants. In other words, if I plant something, I'm not guaranteed that it will grow. But I was thinking about that and how you truly make that happen. So I imagine that I purchased a plot of land and I intended maybe to graze some sheep on it or some cattle or something along those lines. And I figured I would put a fence up and let these cute, fluffy little white animals have at it, right? Go and be sheep. And I realized it may not be that simple, so I did a little research, and turns out there's a whole bunch of stuff you need to know to ensure that the land is suitable to raise sheep or have cattle on or even to grow plants and food on. This got me thinking about farming. Okay, I went from sheep to farming, a little bit interesting. I would admit it right now, like I said, I'm not a farmer, but I do have an understanding of some farming fundamentals. I mean, I did sort of Google it and checked out a few things. And plus, I've been around the agriculture business a little bit. So I found some information about using land and the considerations that go into determine if the land is environmentally suitable for farming or anything else that you want to do from an agriculture perspective. Cleaning up a shed or putting up a fence must be the stuff that you do to the land or needs to be done. But what I found was more interesting was this, and harder to see, namely, was the nutrition levels of plants and the soil makeup. Thinking about farming and agriculture and growing food or taking care of the environment is a lot of work. And that's sort of where my thought went after that, and especially after reading some of the material that I actually found. And you know what it's like? You look up something on the internet, and next you know it brings you to another topic and to another topic and to another topic, and you start to find out a lot more about it. There's a whole lot of stuff that goes into making sure farming business is sustainable and profitable. That was the other piece I started reading. Wow, who figured, right? There's just lots of things going on. So I discovered there was a whole profession out there focused on soil and understanding plants and providing environmental solutions for agriculture. So I started to look around and think to myself, who do I know that might be actually know something about this? And I found a soil scientist, a senior soil scientist, David Wither, of AgriEarth. It's actually pronounced Wither, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
Did
correct.
I get that right, David?
You got it right the second try there.
I got it second right the second time. You know, sometimes I do get guests on that they have a very uniquely spelled name, and you don't quite pronounce it the way it's spelled. Well, not from my perspective anyway, so I'm often never really too sure. But I can get away with Wither.
You got it.
I got it right there. David, welcome to the show, and thank you for that allowing me to do that open. I understand that you're a soil scientist. So, wow, that's a whole profession. But before we start talking about that, let's talk a little bit about you. Okay, so tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thanks, Richard. Pleasure to be here. And that was a great intro. And
you hit the
nail on the head that agriculture is a complex business. And we'll certainly get into that as we go through the discussion today. Just a little bit about myself personally. I grew up in Winnipeg, but always had roots in rural Manitoba and agriculture. My dad grew up on a family farm in southwestern Manitoba, and he, after many years in Winnipeg, migrated back to the Brandon area to start up an agri-retail business and to get back into a farming operation. So I've always had that connection to agriculture, and that's something that has kind of stayed with me through the years.
So you grew up in the business?
Certainly with exposure to a couple different areas of agriculture, the primary agricultural production, or, you know, what we typically call farming, as well as more that agribusiness side, agri-retail business side of things.
Pretty cool. I also understand, I'm going to get a little personal here with you now. I understand you're a family man.
That's correct, yeah. Happily married, and I have two little girls at home. One's turning 4 in 2 days here, and the other one's just turned 9 days old.
So. 9 days old, so congratulations.
Yeah. Well,
I wanted to make sure that you said hi to everybody, and congratulations on having a new addition to your family. Agriculture, you know, I'm going to have to admit right now to my listeners, to you, I do not know a lot about soil scientists. And as another word, I'm missing agrologist.
Agrologist.
Did I get
correct.
It?
Yeah.
Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Agrologist, there we go. So maybe we can start off there because, you know, you start off in a profession, you made a decision to get into being a soil scientist. Let's start there, because I think it's so important to share career with people that maybe there's somebody listening who might be interested in this. So how did you decide to get involved in, or what was the journey of getting involved in being a soil scientist?
Okay. Well, after high school, I took a year off. I didn't, as I said, I had a connection with agriculture, but I didn't really necessarily have, pardon me, didn't necessarily have everything figured out in terms of what I wanted to do with my life, so to speak.
When they're a teenager, well, 17 right, or 18, right?
Yeah, there's certainly lots of pressure on young people to have those things figured out, but it's a difficult thing.
It's harder.
Anyway, to do, of course. Ahead. So took a year off after high school, went, did some traveling in Australia to find myself. In the end, I'm not sure if I found myself, but I did find my life partner. So that was a pretty good thing that happened.
You met Michelle in Australia.
I did, yeah. Two people from Winnipeg. We met in Sydney, Australia. We were both on the same student work abroad program. Crazier bit yet is that our mothers were friends in university days, and my aunt and her mother actually traveled Europe together. So small world.
That's
indeed.
So cool. That yeah. is so yeah. cool. I did not know that about you.
Yeah,
so anyway, go ahead.
Yeah,
tell me about your journey.
You know, coming back from Australia, I heard about this new program at University of Manitoba called Agroecology. And it was a new program focusing on the environmental interactions between agricultural production and the, you know, the broader environment. So I thought, hey, that sounds pretty cool. So I signed up, and kind of the rest is history. Through that agroecology program, I had some soils courses, which I really kind of connected with, and also connected with one professor in particular, and ended up starting a master's program with him following my completion of my undergraduate degree. So I took on a master's program in soil science, where I was able to advance my technical training.
Expertise.
And education, yeah.
Yeah. So out of curiosity, I mean, that sounds like a lot of education. How many years did you spend sort of studying all this stuff?
Yeah, I spent, it was 4 years for the undergraduate degree, as well as another 2 years at the university taking my master's program. It was a combined program with coursework as well as a thesis. Coming out of that 2 years, I spent, I got into the industry and the consulting business, and took a couple of years after that to actually wrap up my thesis and get that part of it submitted. So
I think what we're going to do is, it sounds like it's an incredibly fascinating career. A lot to know and a lot to study, right? And where you want to go with it. So I think what we'll do is we'll take a short break. And when we come back, you mentioned about the consulting industry, that you got in the consulting industry side of things. And I know that you're part of the agri-environmental side, if it's okay for me to say that.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think we should talk about that. This is Richard Land for Set for Success, and we'll be right back. Everyone, welcome back. I am hanging out with a bona fide soil scientist, and we're hanging out talking a little bit about the industry and how he got involved in that. David, just before the break, we were talking a little bit about the consulting industry, because you talked a bit about your education and getting into your career, and that's exciting. I think sharing with people how you get into a career, especially if they're considering something very similar, right, is a good thing. But then you slid more into the consulting field. So tell us a little bit about the movement into the consulting side and that side of the business, really.
Sure. I was fortunate in one of my master's programs classes to meet a guy by the name of Jim Hicks. And he was, I guess, what you'd consider a mature student. He was a professional in the industry with many years' experience and was coming back to upgrade his education. Through meeting him, I found out he was starting a agricultural-focused consultancy in Manitoba, part of a smaller Western Canadian environmental consulting firm, and we kind of hit it off, and he offered me a job. So that was my start in the consulting industry, so working with Jim, starting up a small agricultural environmental consulting firm in Winnipeg.
Back in the day when you were doing that, I don't like to think it was too long ago, but maybe it was. You can share. What kind of projects in that would you be engaged in?
Yeah, so that was back in 2001 that I got my start in consulting field. There was two big drivers, I think, for the environmental work back then in the agriculture industry. One was a rapid expansion of irrigated crop production driven by the increase in potato processing demand in Manitoba, as well as just generally nutrient management issues and, related to things like management of agri-retail fertilizer sites and then many other aspects of nutrient management at the farm level.
Okay. And again, it's sort of out of curiosity, when I think farm, I always think corporate farm and I think family farm. Big distinction between the two, or
I personally don't like using those
terms.
I think the primary agriculture sector certainly changed over the years and evolved, and it's had to based on the increasing pressures on primary agricultural producers. So you know the farms have certainly gotten larger in size. In terms of the land base that they have to manage, the number of animals they produce and that kind of thing. But most of the farms, in southern Manitoba are still family owned and operated, but they have become, a bigger business in many regards.
Okay, that's fair enough. I mean, that's actually good for me to hear and even the listeners just to sort of understand that a bit because, we see so much in media, right, about the ins and outs and that of the farming business and how it's actually structured today. So you talked a bit about in 2001 what some of the key challenges were when you started your career. And if we were to fast forward now to 2017, how have the challenges changed or what kind of challenges exist today within the agribusiness that you're seeing?
Yeah, I think a lot of the challenges are similar. Some of the, potentially some of the specific problems have changed or evolved over time. But, kind of looking at kind of that macro level in terms of the agriculture sector in Manitoba and thinking about primary production, I think there's kind of three major issues that are, I think, of most importance, one being nutrient management, which is a big one. The other one that's certainly become prominent in the last few years is around the water management side. So dealing with insufficient water to produce crops and dealing with excess water as well. We've come through a pretty long wet cycle and farmers have been having to deal with this issue of wet soils and drownouts and challenges getting on their land. Third issue, I think, which is obviously it's front and center, is around climate change. Agriculture is a contributor to greenhouse gas emissions and particularly around nutrient usage and soil carbon dynamics and so certainly has a role to play there as well.
So it's great that you gave me 3 points because now I'm going to back up a little bit, right? Nutrient management, let's talk a little bit about that. Exactly what is nutrient management in terms of a consulting practice or in terms of the services from an agriculture perspective?
Okay, yeah, well, agriculture produces crops and livestock and both of those need nutrients to survive and grow. So application of nutrients is integral to crop production, and as well on the livestock side, of course, a lot of nutrients come out the other end. And those enter back into our soils and find a way into groundwater and surface water. So that's kind of the key issue around nutrient management and getting into the consulting side of it is helping the industry figure out ways to keep those nutrients on the land and in the soil where the crops can use them. And doing what we can to limit entry of those nutrients into the atmosphere and into our waters.
Okay. Okay. So that makes a lot of sense. You mentioned that climate change is right at the forefront. I mean, we're talking a lot about climate change and a lot of things. And what are you seeing in terms of the trends right now in that space around the agriculture industry?
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of focus on greenhouse gas emissions and I mentioned soil carbon as well. Some of the necessary evils, if you will, of agriculture is burning fossil fuels. We've mentioned nutrient application as well. There's issues related to loss of soil carbon from drainage of wet soils, as well as just from tillage of the land. So, those are some of the specific areas that are starting to get more focus.
Okay. So then I'm just sort of curious about what are some of the things that in terms of solutions around those issues, where farmers are engaged in terms of taking care of some of those challenges.
Right. Obviously farmers have a service to provide to the community, and that's producing food and fiber for us. But I think we're starting to see a little bit of a shift here where I think we're moving into an era where farmers are going to be providing different ecological goods and services to to society, and that, you know, looking at things like wetland preservation and looking at ways, different ways to capture and store things like soil carbon, and that, you know, that could be a means to offset greenhouse gas emissions from agriculture as well as other industries.
So there are some future trends in terms of looking at the same problem differently and trying to provide, like when you say like wetland conservation, to me that says, and please correct me, right? That says, okay, you know, we need to make sure that we keep these intact. And when we're looking at clearing our land for farming purposes, we need to make sure that we also either create this or keep it intact. Am I in the right thinking?
Yeah. I think you're right. I think I guess it's important to note that agricultural producers are under increasing financial pressures. You look at, increasing land prices, high input costs, that those things have translated into lower margins over time. So there's lots of pressure on agricultural producers to maximize production. And, you know, those forces, I think, have been the ones that have pushed farmers to look at draining wetlands and potholes and that kind of thing. So it's been necessary for them to
deal with that.
Yeah.
I think what we can do is we'll take a short break. When we come back, maybe we can talk a bit about what farmers are doing to deal with these extra pressures and where you come into play. This is Richard Lamb for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with David Wetter, soil scientist and agrologist. How did I do that time,
Dave? You did well.
I did well?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I get the professional name in there or title in there correctly. Just before the break, we're talking a bit about the pressures that exist in agriculture. I mean, there's lots of pressures to produce more, maybe even to produce healthier foods. Like, let's just talk about that, first of all. So what are, and maybe as a review, what are the pressures that we're seeing in agriculture overall, sort of a bit of a review? I mean, I've picked up a few. What would you say some of them are?
Well, I think before the break there, we talked about, touched on the financial pressures, and that's omnipresent. It's ever looming, and it's something that continues to be, a growing challenge for producers. Beyond that, we talked about some of the environmental issues that farmers are facing, or that the industry is facing, and agriculture plays a role in. And that's another area where, you know, as time goes on, the environmental regulatory environment is becoming more complex, and farmers as they look at improving the way they operate, implementing things like irrigation or looking at implementing drainage improvements, they have to apply for permits and get environmental approvals. And that's an area where, I mentioned it's a complex business and farmers are requiring more support than they used to traditionally. And that's an area where consultants such as myself and AgriEarth comes in to provide that kind of technical and management support.
Yeah, and I know that during the break, you and I were talking a bit about, well, what does a consultant do? So maybe that's sort of a good place to start, because as we know in business, I mean, with regulations, right, and any kind of business that impacts, well, what were the three things you talked about? Water management, nutrient management, environment management, right? So just those three things alone would create its own complexity. So what does a consultant that helps people in the agribusiness out in your space do?
Yeah, I guess we talked about my technical focus being soil science. So you've mentioned a couple times that I'm an agrologist, a professional agrologist. I'm a member of the
agrologist. I got it. All right.
The Manitoba Institute of Agrologists is going to be loving
how often we're
saying
the word?
Agrologist. Yeah. But I am part of that the profession. We're legislated in Manitoba, and we serve many facets of the agriculture industry. Again, my expertise is relatively narrow in the spectrum of agrology, but I focus on the soil science and environment.
Aspects. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Don't let me cut you off.
Some of the areas that AgriEarth, myself, serve, we support environmental assessment and permitting for producers in agribusiness. We conduct land suitability assessments, so just ensuring that, the land is compatible with the proposed land usage, get into realms around environmental monitoring to ensure that the management practices are are appropriate and that these beneficial practices are doing what we think they'll do.
So I want to step back a little bit because I know in my monologue, I sort of played with the idea of what if I bought a piece of land and I wanted to, you know, have sheep or cattle or whatever on it, right? And I got to start thinking about this stuff. Like, really, it did. And then I sort of started thinking about what would somebody do. So you talked a little bit about land suitability assessments for various land uses. So what might, maybe you can tell us a bit of a story around a client you've worked with where you've done some land suitability assessments and give us some ideas how it worked and what the challenges were and what the benefits were to the client. You don't have to say who the client is, just more or less, you know, an example.
Sure. Yeah. Perhaps I can draw on experience I've had in the irrigation subsector of agriculture. So I've done a lot of work supporting agricultural producers who want to develop irrigation projects. And this is something, depending on the size of the project, requires an Environment Act license. So, I've supported producers through that process in terms of the first step is understanding the land base and again how compatible that land base is with that proposed irrigation development, and then assuming that or on the assumption that land is suitable, then working through that Environment Act process in Manitoba to help the producer acquire an environment license so that they can develop that project.
Okay, so those are the basic things to do. What might something like that look like? Like, are you able to give us sort of a size or complexity, et cetera?
Sure. Yeah. Size and complexity is related to ultimately to the size of the projects,
sure,
and projects come in all sizes and shapes.
So, but pick one for
you. Typically, there's various aspects of these projects. There's overall project management, which is involves client liaison and liaison with regulatory staff and provincial agriculture agencies and the like. We typically have to get out onto the land. You have to be on the land to gain that understanding and appreciation. So there's, what we call a field work component.
I call it site visits.
Visits. So,
right?
We're out, interviewing producers to understand their operation. We're going out digging soil pits and auger holes to gain that understanding of that soil environment. And then, coming out of the field, lots of desktop work in terms of analyzing information and compiling information, interpreting information, and compiling the necessary reports to support these environmental applications.
Okay. Out of curiosity, I always like to think of pros and cons, those kind of things. Have you ever had any situations where everything was sort of almost textbook? And I'm going to call textbook as in A, B, C, D, you rate the Z, no challenges, no problems whatsoever. Or is there always little challenges along the way? And what might some of those challenges be?
Yeah, I'm smiling here because there's... You always have a plan and nothing
best
in life ever,
best laid plans, right?
Yeah.
Best laid plans. There we go. I got it out of my mouth.
Absolutely. And that's, that's where experience and project management comes in because, like I said, no project, I don't think in the history of time has gone totally according
straight
to plan.
Line.
So there's always, surprises and curves in the road, but, it comes down to the ability to address those, to see those curves coming and figure out how to adapt your plan and face those challenges.
For some of the projects that you've done, like you've used the irrigation one as the example. I know that growing up in the world of project management, my own area of expertise, and you get to a point where you sort of know what's going to come because it's. You've seen it before, right? Like, are there certain things that our farming community should be aware of that generally show up when you're looking to work with them or when they're looking to have some kind of assessment done? And I've been sort of playing around with the land suitability assessment side. Is there something that generally shows up? Like, what do you see the most?
From a technical perspective, I think that's pretty straightforward. I mean, there's always challenges there in terms of understanding that that soil landscape and how it will interact with the proposed development, whether it's an irrigation project or drainage project, and understanding that environmental interaction and figuring out how to manage it. One of the things I think is a little more of a wild card is public involvement, and that's something that it's not unique to agriculture. The public is becoming more involved, and that's right from people wanting to have a better understanding of where their food comes from, and understanding, you know, how it's grown and raised, and you know, impacts associated with that, and getting into the realm of food quality, and as well on the public side, when we're looking at going through environmental approvals process, you know, in the last 15 plus years that I've been in the business, I've certainly seen an increase in public attention to projects. And I think I mentioned this certainly isn't related to agriculture. We're seeing it right across the board. Oil and gas is a big one, of course. But
mining, oil and gas.
Yeah, we are seeing it, but agriculture isn't insulated to that either. So.
Okay. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. This is Richard Lamb for Set for Success. Hello, everyone. Welcome back. You are hanging out, yes, on Set for Success. And I am hanging out with David Wetter, and we've been talking a bit about the agriculture business, actually, and some of the key challenges that exist. And just before we ended the last segment, we were talking about public involvement. And public, you know, these days, whether it's agriculture, mining services, or resource industry, other areas, oil and gas, I mean, we have seen a growth of public involvement, and from everything from being interested in terms of the quality of services they're getting, or interested in their food quality and types of food we're having, or reading up and staying informed about things that are happening, you know. David, out of curiosity, and I sort of probably know this question because we've talked a little bit about this trend, and as a small business owner, and we'll get to that in just a moment, where do you think that sort of public involvement has grown from?
Yeah, I mentioned the kind of a couple different areas there. Certainly the food safety, concern over food safety is a big one, and that's one that the public's getting more involved in, as mentioned, as well as clients, and, you know, in terms of people that buy farmers' produce, whether that's different countries or
locally.
Or locally, yeah, different companies.
There's a big organic, local, buy local movement right now.
For sure.
Yeah, that goes on.
Yep.
Now, during the break, we were talking a little bit about, first of all, I do want to say, I suspect it has something to do, most people come in and say it has something to do with the internet. We just have that access to information. Like anything I want to know, I just go and read up on it, right?
Yeah, you can find a lot of information quickly. And one of the challenges is obviously filtering that information and, you know, understanding what's factual and what's not.
I have to imagine, I must imagine, yeah, it must be impacting the agriculture industry and the local farmer, the person who owns the farm too.
For sure. And then, you know, we've talked about farmers having to evolve their businesses, and one of the challenges as well on that front is just, you know, a little closer to home in terms of the, you know, the sights and sounds and smells of agriculture in the rural landscape. And, you know, you get into issues with neighbors that are concerned over the, you know, the environment around them and that kind of thing. So, which is, you know, there's some legitimate, genuine concerns out there. And those are something that farmers have to continue to address.
Based on the concerns that we've talked about today, your company, AgriEarth, do you help farmers in that space?
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, talked about some of the project management services, client liaison services. So, you know, we come in on that front as well as the technical side to provide support to producers to navigate, you know, the regulatory issues that we mentioned, as well as you know, dealing with public and municipal councils and that type of thing.
Okay. President, CEO of AgriEarth, small business owner. I'm always interested in entrepreneurs, their own challenges when actually having a company that you're building and growing. What do you find some of the own challenges for your own business?
Yeah, so I recently transitioned from working in a very large company and obviously started up a very small company in the spring. Probably the biggest challenge for me has been dealing with limited resources. So, you know, time is certainly one of those resources that is limited. And then another issue is just the, you know, kind of a narrow range or breadth of service offering that a small company can provide. So those are, you know, some of the major, right? I guess the biggest challenges that I've been facing.
So what are you doing to offset the time challenge? That we can share with other entrepreneurs.
Yeah, one of this is kind of enter the network. So this is you know, something
network.
as a small business, it's about having a network of you know, of support. So I'm fortunate that I have some trusted colleagues and consultants, and these are, you know, other small consultancies like myself, and then some larger ones as well. I have a pretty strong network that I can draw on, and to bring in additional resources and expertise that that clients require. So.
Yeah, and that's a very common challenge for all small business owners, and myself included, right? I think my listeners know that I do this radio show, but I also run a business too, and you have to have a fully developed network in terms of just the fundamentals of your business, and I guess there are things you actually can do. When you do go out to your network, are there certain resources that you're finding you're pulling on more than others at this point in time?
I guess I can maybe give you a specific example of that. The expertise I bring is in soil science and environment, and certainly lots of the challenges that producers are facing are more complex than just that. I work closely with an agricultural engineer who, like myself, has a small independent consulting firm, and he and I really really complement each other well, and together we're able to work together to solve some of these more complex issues that producers are facing.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense. And having a network, almost pun intended, having your network to grow. I'm sorry, since we've been talking so much about agriculture, I just couldn't help myself. And land usage, it makes a lot of sense. What are some of the other key challenges that you have at this point in time?
Well, again, on the support side, there's lots of aspects to running a business. There's, you have to obviously go out there and develop your business and market yourself. You have to deliver on your commitments to clients, and you have to keep all the other aspects of the business running, all the administrative aspects, tracking expenses, invoicing, and all that good stuff.
All this fun stuff.
So certainly,
administration.
So having a network there, different type of network, but having support there, whether that's legal support or accounting support, having all that in place and understanding where you provide the most value and where you should be pulling in others, where they can provide better value to your business than you can.
It's interesting. I just had this conversation yesterday with another CEO, and we were talking about high value activity versus low value activity. And it's an interesting concept for any business owner, because high value activities are things you should be focusing on, and then you should make a list of low value activities. But low value activities could be high value activities for somebody else. They don't mean they're low value activities, they just mean they're low for you, right?
Right.
Yeah. Give them away, right? Have somebody else to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of my next steps is getting a website up and running, and that's a perfect example. I could spend numerous hours trying to figure out how to develop a website. I have someone that's going to do that for me, because they provide that high value, and I can keep focusing on where I provide
on your
good
business,
value.
Yeah. Build your business or work in your business, that kind of thing. Always a bit of a challenge. If somebody wanted to get in touch with you, how would they go about doing that?
Well, they can always pick up the phone and call me. My number is 204-799-4877, or you can reach me via email at david.wetter@agriearth.ca.
Right on. Good way to get in touch with you. Lots of great services and everything too. I mean, because I was looking over your list in terms of just alternative land use and land application, nutrition, and biosoils. I mean, there's just so many things I could actually talk to you about here, but we are limited, as we say, time, right? Dave, it's been great having you on the show. I thoroughly always enjoy having a new guest and a new topic area, and even if it allows the listeners, even myself, to explore something new. If you had a final thought for the listeners, what might it be?
That's a tough one, but don't pass up opportunities when they present themselves. I guess, I made a pretty major transition a few months ago, and be prepared to leave your comfort zone and take some measured risks, and you'll be rewarded, or at least you'll know that you gave it a go, and you won't have regrets looking back.
Well, you'll definitely learn something new. It sounds to me like you have quite the excellent expertise, that you're positioned in the right place to use it, that you're part of the agriculture business and really making that business better. So thank you for that. I think it's a good thing. And thank you for hanging out with me today. Listeners, I always appreciate when you tune in. And you know what I'm going to say next. If you have a thought, an idea, a guest that I should have on the show, then send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And do remember to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.